Is there any question or anything to say?
A question which comes from me is, if I look to what we are doing during the meditation, the methods we are using, and I'm looking at sometimes or what I self-experience or know what they have done in therapy. So what is there a difference? Is there a relation between both? How do you see that? Maybe in a level of the goal and the methods or something like that.
So the question of spiritual practice and psychotherapy, and whether they're different, whether they overlap. I guess I'm curious why that's alive for you as a question.
Oh, actually, and sometimes it's pretty, it seems in a way pretty the same.
Mm-hmm.
On some level. On another level, I have the feeling no, it's not the same, it's a different goal or something.
Mm-hmm. So maybe if you describe what you find to be the same first, and then what you feel as some difference. For yourself.
If I look to mindfulness, meditation, looking, feeling inside what's going on, being with it, not dramatizing, not pushing it away, just being with it. And this is something that I understood is very near to psychotherapy, especially if you take something like somatic experience, which is a method especially for traumatized people. So at that point the question was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could you hear? So with mindfulness, which is just being with what's happening, whether body or mind, without making it more or less, he understands that to be very similar to some forms of therapy, in a way, many forms of therapy. So he suggested, for example, something called somatic experiencing. So that would be maybe, I'm guessing, more awareness of the body sensations with what's going on. But just like I said, and I think the last retreat, one of the retreats, that if we would find out about friendship, I think 90% of our need for psychotherapy would be gone. So just to be able to be with each other without making more or less, to listen to myself, to you, something can happen without any degree and without any check at the end of the session, where partly because we're just being with it, not more, not less, that the intelligence in that experience has a chance to express, even if it's a painful experience or a misunderstood experience, shocking experience. Some life intelligence has a chance to move by being felt or heard or met more openly. And in fact, if I'm busy helping you and you're busy being helped, we won't find that openness. And what do you feel as when you say you question whether there may be something, so for example, other than mindfulness on the spiritual path that might not be included in psychotherapy? Or we don't know, but in your experience or your understanding?
Actually, in a way, it's a question. I started in a way with more on a therapy level.
Yeah.
And I didn't look for spirituality,
mm-hmm.
not at all. And I don't know if the issues I worked on with father and mother, my history as a child, if this would have been a good place to be here.
So one question that comes up, so Klaus is saying when he first started looking for something other than what was offered, let me say, and he went more towards therapy, and he was looking into relationship, family relationships and history. And he wonders if he had been himself then, coming here now, if that would have fit. So I think we could accept that sometimes people who have training in therapy can be helpful. It can be a time to find a way to be honest and brave and understand how we came to be shaped this way. So just to say, like, of course, therapy can be good. But I thought your question was going to be the other part, like, is there something that we can find more easily here that might do away with some need for therapy that might be better than therapy, let's say. And I always get stuck about the word therapy, which as far as I understand just means like help. But I know what you mean. And as usual, it has to do with my talk as well. So I hope that it will feel relevant as we get into the talk. So just want to, as a question maybe, doesn't there seem to be something that we either fall in touch with occasionally or that somehow is calling us to be here? Even if I don't feel I'm in my temple inside me, but something that, even if I can't stop myself from moving around in the old ways and being worried and fearful and busy and angry and working on my problems and causing myself more problems. That isn't there still some kind of thread that we feel that leads somewhere else, that's about something else? So in the last talk, in the poem about the tree with the line, there it is, about gathering all accidents into its purpose. And the question, what is its purpose? If the purpose isn't surviving, if the purpose isn't to avoid getting scarred, to not be hurt, isn't the main purpose. So not surviving, but still something about living, some kind of juiciness. That acts but isn't busy, that doesn't particularly focus on the negative. It doesn't it doesn't ignore the negative, but it doesn't particularly make a big ado about the negative. Seamless in its bending and long growth. And so one way we could introduce the talk today is to call it, like, what about joy? Or the possibility of joy. Not as an avoidance of our problems and our history, but as something that's been there all along and could come up to the surface as well as to the depth. And juice it all up. I have a couple of more poems by the same guy, Wendell Berry. The first one that wants to come in is called Breaking. Did I believe I had a clear mind? It was like the water of a river, flowing shallow, so not deep, over the ice. And now that the rising water has broken the ice, I see that what I thought was the light is part of the dark. Did I believe I had a clear mind? It was like the water of a river flowing shallow over the ice. And now that the rising water has broken the ice, I see that what I thought was the light is part of the dark. Sometimes we're in that shallow, narrow mind where there's a lot of movement. And we can have this understanding that we've got something clear. We have, for example, a clear decision to make. We've clearly got to work on this problem. We've clearly got to follow this method. We've clearly got to slow down. And even if it's slowing down, that seems to be clear. That's what we got to do. That's what we're doing. And even if that flow is not unconnected from the whole river, it's part of the river, but the idea that that little tiny layer of the river is all is really funny. And if we could step back into how funny it is in the middle of our decision making and our trying to go deep, and watch what actually happens, which is that eventually the river does rise and the ice gets broken by a force much greater than our willpower. And the realization also occurs, comes upon us. Just like the river rising and the ice breaking, it's now obvious that what I thought was, let's say, important, what I thought I understood, it's not even like how percent true was it? It's just irrelevant. To what's now? What I thought was fluid, I thought I was getting into my flow. Was a little cold water on top of a lot of ice. So if we can understand our understandings, to get the feeling of when it's shallow and therefore irrelevant, that means it has nothing to do with what's really going on. The movements that we're tracking and tuning into and grading and judging are such a small part of the actual situation. And so if we can kind of practice ungripping the mind from that, ungripping the thinking from that little tiny layer, Byron Katie, who's also, so not only bad things come out of the United States, another American, in this case a woman named Byron Katie, weird name, from her book, Loving What Is. Most of us are so busy making improvements, we don't notice we've stepped out of heaven. Wherever we are, something or someone could always be better. And the curious thing is we don't notice this drive going on, pushing us along. And we forget, we've almost forgotten that it's heaven and what heaven feels like and how heaven could carry us. When we say heaven, then it easily could feel like heaven, hell, and that's it. Those are the two options. That heaven would be finished and perfect and done. Relief from struggle, relief from path, relief from not understanding, relief from dark. But that would just be another thin layer of the river on top of more ice. And can we love the whole river, the dark and the light? Another one of those lines from my favorite book, Yog Vashisht. It talks about stepping out of the nest and walking on the air, taking steps on air. So it says nest, and we might think of bird, but we don't know what we are yet. And before knowing what we are, we can still take a step out of the nest and walk on what seems unable to support us, not the ice. So Byron Katie continues, you don't have to believe everything your thoughts tell you. So if you want to replace all your thoughts with one thought, that might be a good one. I don't have to believe everything my thoughts tell me. When we begin to notice our thoughts, one of the things we'll see is that we're never alone. We're not even alone with ourselves. She says she likes to be kind of direct in your face. She'll be direct in your face and then say, sweetheart, honey. You're not even alone with yourself. Wherever you go, whomever you're with, the voice in your head goes with you. If you're afraid to be alone, it means you're afraid of your thoughts. And then this is where we might be stepping away from the realm of what so far is called psychotherapy, like let it grow, let it be wider. If the voice in your head is you, so in therapy we talk about all the different voices in us and let them have a voice, let them be heard, etc., which can help bring out the intelligence there. But if the voice in your head, the voice is in your body, the voice in your psyche, the voice is all over you, if that's you, who is the one listening to it? Where's the big river that brought that little thin layer up? And where's the big river that just washes it all away? Every spring. So last time I spoke about the trap door. Trap door in time, where when we really love, there's always more time for that. And there's trap doors in space where just we fall into the deep river and in the same place, the same path we've been walking up and down for 20 days, we suddenly come into contact with something that's been there all along. We might just suddenly see something that we've never seen, and it's a rock. It's been there before the ashram. Or it's something inside, it's been there all along. So a kind of noticing. A trap door in the heart, where we come into trouble, we come into friction. And we start to smell that shallowness of the water. We start to smell that any way that I would make effort to try to fix this is not a way through, is not going to bring more fluidity. So a small example from a few days ago for myself was in the closing talk of the second retreat, we were sitting in a circle. And the third teacher on that retreat was sitting next to me, and she was saying her thank you and goodbye. And my son Gyan was sitting on this side of me, doing an interpretive dance of her talk. which had an edge to it. It wasn't just this really, like when she said thank you, he would be like this, which it could have been sweet, and it was almost sweet, but it had an edge to it that wasn't sweet. And luckily, we do learn from experience. So finally, after 5 years experience, I could really feel that no matter what I would do, wouldn't help, wouldn't quiet him. And so then what happened was this sense of widening heart, just really as if the heart were like that much bigger. So that, like Zohar and Gyan, were both in the same place, in the same heart. And it's not that it necessarily changed, like some people might have been offended by what Gyan was doing. Some people might have thought it was funny and then gotten distracted and not listened. The same things might have happened around the place. But there was definitely some kind of room for some kind of magic that wasn't there when I would have been trying to navigate and squash his interpretive dance. She said the word six, I remember, and he was like. Chögyam Trungpa talks about, as many spiritual teachers do, about how we could say, like, in the beginning, there is vastness. And it's so vast that we kind of pass out, blank out. We understand it as too big for me. We don't know how to be like accepting the vast and the limited on the same page, in the same river. And we don't just kind of wake up and it's vast again. We don't quite wake up all the way. We go for some kind of in-between way that doesn't leave really room for either vast or limited. It doesn't leave room for a fullness of contact with vastness or limited. It's just filtering from a place of fear. And so what we need to find out is how to leave room for the fear, to know the fear, to know the power of the fear, and also to feel what isn't fear. Also to feel the possibility of joy that's outside, all around, and in between, even inside the fear. And this is where there's a kind of disagreement, just a pure disagreement, between spiritual practice and psychotherapy, where there is no real interest in history per se. History just as history. There's interest in how history can help me find and trace and really know what is fear and how does it operate? And how does it keep me half asleep, half awake, half dead, half alive? And how does that then help me? If I'm going through the way of suffering to awakening, how does that open me up to what isn't fear? What isn't in a purpose of surviving? What's in the purpose that gathers all accidents? And a pure trust of that, even if I don't know why and what have you, I know there is joy. So the trapdoor of experience where we back out of the nest and we land in the air. So even though something in us keeps wanting to go to what's easy to feel and what's obvious, so therefore especially what's painful, there's also something in us that does naturally. It's a naturally occurring, just not because I set myself the challenge to jump out of the nest like a hero, but a natural falling out of the nest and landing in the air. And so it's not this duality of like heaven and hell, sky and earth. The sky is our earth. We can walk on the sky. We can walk from subtle to subtle to subtle, to groundless, to weightless. And with the limited and with the earth, we can move through the earth. What seemed solid moves by itself. The river will rise and will carry it all away. So in being open to allow that falling into the hand of air, falling into that calling of the subtle, calling of the joy, we also can feel for where the exertion of will, so me trying, me using my willpower, is, the word stagnant comes to mind. Stagnant would be when the river stops moving. Stagnant would be when there's sky up there and heaven down here. Or, sorry, the other way around. Sky up here and earth down here. Yeah, sorry. Feeling for where does the impulse to use my willpower come from? I want to try to do something different. I don't want to be dominated by the habits. I don't want to be dominated by the biology. I don't want to have history repeat. And so then normally we try to move the river, try to move it over. And we get bored and tired and we give up and we despair. And we forget that any of those emotions along the way, the despair, the boredom, the exhaustion, frustration, disappointment, any of those would be ways back to the river if we accept and fully meet them without our ideas of them, without our history of them. But we can just naturally feel, with our natural capacity to feel, that when I'm using my willpower, it's not enough and it doesn't work. But that's not the end of the story. It is a dead end, but it's not an end of the story. It's not an end of the river. We can naturally feel, we keep staying with whatever kind of flow we can find. We don't call it an end. And especially another poem from Wendell Berry called I Am Not Ashamed. Do not be ashamed. And it's too long and complicated English, so I'll just tell you his It's a kind of a joke poem. It says, someday, some night, you'll be walking along, and they will find you. Their searchlight will pick you out, and there'll be a wall you never noticed was there. And they will ask you questions, and they will wave the paper in your face to sign that it's your fault, that you did it wrong. And if you sign, kind of all is lost, because the rest of your life you'll be running after them asking forgiveness. So you've given your authority to some outside principle, and they will never forgive you. Wendell Berry says they will never forgive you. There's no power that can overcome that. And so he says, his suggestion on that night is just to say four words: I am not ashamed. And the heron will lift from the tree and fly away. We'll be in touch with a kind of naturalness that doesn't fall under the law. Of history, of tension, of shame. And so then we can come to our lives with our best intelligence. It's another line from that book, Yog Vasishtha, that it's a suggestion from the teacher to his student. Come to meet your teacher with your best intelligence, from your most deep, wise place, from your best wisdom, the teacher tells the student. Then we would make that into a way to be ashamed, that we didn't come with our best intelligence. But if we just feel how we could meet our lives more often from our deepest wisdom, through the practice of I am not ashamed, and how the heron lifts from the tree and flies away. We'll more often feel us to be ourselves. We'll start to know from our own experience what it is to be myself. And it will feel familiar in a strange way, not because of history, kind of inside familiarity. And then that familiarity will give way, just like another layer of ice breaking, to unfamiliarity, when we start to be disloyal to our personality. The seed sprouts and leaves the husk behind. And the seed is unfamiliar, and the sprout is unfamiliar. You don't have to believe everything your thoughts tell you. Are there any questions so far? The option of coming together with things in our experience, inside and outside. Not gathering our strength and coming to meet it. But in a way, it's more like feeling the river in us be part of the river of what we are in. Letting our deep flow come into touch with what we experience inside and outside. There's another avoidance that we practice of our lives. In our trying to understand, so the genuine movement to understanding, we want to understand so that we can better meet our lives, better flow into our lives, better be carried by our lives. But we need to let understanding have a trap door and be much bigger than what we expected. Hafiz talks about resting from the work of separation from God. So he uses that word with three letters in English, G-O-D. That I don't feel at all like going against or interpreting, except to say, what if it's something that isn't what we imagined? Isn't to do with our history. Isn't to do with our history of the word. Or we can just leave it out of the poem completely. Let's rest from the hard work of separation. Sometimes the rest is giving up the will power, so not caring. Sometimes the rest is gathering the mind away from its worries, gathering the mind somewhere, like the breath, the lower belly, a mantra, a word, a deep wish, a color. Sometimes rest is rest, going to sleep, relaxing the body, waking up fresh. Waking up fresh in the middle of the night and getting up, enjoying the night air and that atmosphere that's there, that isn't there now. Letting rest turn us inside out and upside down. And then our kind of receptors for rest. The sensing capacity, the ability to feel rest. And what helps rest? Rest therapy. Whatever helps rest. That we become more susceptible, we become more receptive to it, we can feel it at 4 o'clock in the morning. Even when our ideas are fighting against us and saying, you're going to be tired, you're going to miss the instructions, you're going to miss lunch, you're going to miss the papadums. Krishnamurti talks about a way that we escape being whole. Someone asks him a theoretical question, because he's saying rest, basically. Krishnamurti is telling a group of people about rest in a different way, saying stop fighting your problems. Find rest back so you can feel where it starts. And so the person says, are you saying that everyone who ever lived will eventually be enlightened without doing anything? Is that what you're saying? And doesn't that lead to stagnation? Doesn't that lead to a misuse of our will and our lives? And Krishnamurti shows in action what he means by going to the core of the problem. Instead of addressing the question on the surface, instead of talking about the shallow water above the ice, he says that he's not talking about the masses. And he doesn't find that there is such a thing as masses. It's just people. and he's talking to people. And he says, if you apply what I'm saying, he says, Krishnamurti says to those people, if you apply what I am saying only to the other person, the person outside, then you are but increasing darkness. You're making it impossible to understand deeply. So sometimes it happens, it's an easy example, we're on retreat with someone we know. So I remember being on retreat with my mother, being on retreat with my boyfriend, being on retreat with friends, whatever. And it's their first retreat, and how are they doing, and did they understand, and are they okay again? And not much can really trickle in to our own. But even when no one we know is here, we look at ourselves that way through a filter of it has to kind of make sense generally. And I have to understand it generally before I apply, before I try it out, before I let it in and move with it. To understand an experience fully, you must come to it freshly each time it confronts you. Memory prevents us from approaching experience openly, nakedly. And sometimes memory, most of the time, memory is so strong we don't feel we have a way out. But we always have the river that brought that shallow layer on top of the ice. To know the dark, it's another poem by Wendell Berry. So we can't always get through the ice, but we could take the fact of that river running on top of the ice, however superficial, however constraining, however small, narrow, as a clear indication that there's a river going on. That we might not be able to experience fully right away in the same way that we can, or we think that we can see this top layer. So Wendell Berry says, to know the dark. To go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To try to find the deeper understanding through the small understanding would be to go with small understanding and to stay small. To go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To know the dark. Go without light. And find that the dark, too, blooms, like a flower opens, blooms and sings, and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. I don't have to pay them much, and they're really good. A few papadums here and there. Are there any questions or any comments? Anything you want to add? Thank you for being here.